It's Saturday. You know what time it is. Front Runner Podcast Collective is back on the air. I am your humble host, Vince. And today we'll be talking a little bit more about the 2025 draft. We'll also talk to you a little bit about Paul George's cohesion with his new group in Philadelphia. We're also going to talk about some of our breakout targets for this upcoming season. So we have a lot to get to, so we're excited to get to it. And before we do that, let's talk about the socials. X at FrontRunnerPC, and then also at Rhea_Funch, FRPC, is the producers. Go ahead and follow us on X and get what is there, because the thing about this is that as this season continues to unfold, you're going to be needing more and more information, and I'm telling you, this is the spot to get it. The other thing that we want to talk about is we want to talk about the YouTube page is gone a metamorphosis, and tomorrow is the day that it breaks out. Going to be really exciting. I would expect it sometime like in the afternoon. So if you're getting that sandwich or whatever between the morning games and the afternoon games, or in the East Coast situation, the early afternoon games into the late afternoon games, go ahead and go to the YouTube page and check out some of the new things there. There'll be a couple polls up probably from this podcast and the last. And we'll have some new videos, and they might look a little different. Go to, on YouTube, Front Runner Podcast Collective. And then the last thing is be a friend and tell a friend about the podcast. The reason for this is because we want to grow. The reason why we want to grow is because we want to do other things other than hoops. We might want to do some football. We might want to do some college football. Hell, we might even want to do some pro wrestling. Who knows? But without more participation, we can't achieve these things. So it's up to you on how we grow. And then the last thing that we need to get to before we get to the podcast is that I want to thank the producers, Rhea and Funch, for being on the ones and twos today and providing a lot of the information that you're going to hear on the podcast. So I want to thank them before we get started. But it is time, folks. It is time for the podcast. And I am very interested to dive back into this draft class again. We told you, we made this promise to you that we were going to continue to familiarize yourself with this draft class that is coming up. We also have mentioned that Sam has said that this is the best draft class he's seen in 20 years. He's been doing it for 20 years, so high praise there. And then the other thing is that this is a continual loop to all the things that we've already discussed about this draft class so far. So if this is your first time hearing about some of these prospects on Front Runner Podcast Collective, don't worry. There is a whole archive. We've been talking about the top lottery picks. We've been talking about some of the lower level lottery picks. We've been talking about some of the guys that from 15 to 22 and 22 to 30. And then as we get along into November, we'll expand out to about 45 guys. We've talked about 30 guys so far in this draft class. So go back through the archives and you can see that we've been talking about these guys all summer long. So if this is the first time you're hearing about Dylan Harper, who we're about to talk about, know that there is a ton of Dylan Harper stuff in the back episodes. All right. With that being said, let's get into the Dylan Harper of it all. Dylan Harper, he will be joining Ace Bailey at Rutgers this year. Now, the State School of Rutgers is not my favorite school, but the one thing that I want to say about Dylan Harper is this. He is the son of Ron Harper. If you're not familiar with Ron Harper, let me introduce you to Ron Harper. Ron Harper played on the championship Laker teams of the Kobe Shaq era. He also played on some of those Chicago Bulls teams that won championships. And he was on the Cleveland team that had Brad Doherty, Mark Price, and a couple others. I think it was John Hot Rod Williams was on that team. And Ron Harper, when he was in Cleveland, that was prior to the knee injury. He was really athletic. He was really good. And there was a talk that Jordan had some comp, but then the knee injury sapped him. We did not have the technology and the medical treatment that we do now. He turned himself into basically a 3-and-D guy before there was that, and provided excellent defense for many a championship team. And now we have his son. So Dylan Harper is 6'5". He's 19 years old. Let's talk about some of his strengths. Harper is polished with elite footwork and playmaking. His 7-to-1 assist to turnover ratio during the under-19 World Cup demonstrated his control and court vision. Let me tell you something. 3-to-1 is exemplary. When you're talking about 7-to-1, and especially in what we're talking about, remember what I just said, under-19 World Cup. This is when these guys are trying to show up, show out. Now, yes, they're trying to win, and there's probably a little more tightening on the fundamentals and things of that nature. But if you get one of these young guys on the break, oh yeah, they're trying to show out. And for him to have a 7-to-1 assist to turnover ratio, that's mastery level stuff right there. That's just telling you how locked in he was. That's also telling you that he values the basketball at a high level. It also tells you that the passes that he is going to make, he is going to make sure that those passes are going to get there. I love that particular stat about Dylan Harper. Now, we haven't even got all into the athleticism and all of these things, but I just wanted to really drive home the 7-to-1 assist to turnover. I can't get over it myself, personally. Sam Vicini said of The Athletic, he pointed out that his recent mock, Harper's ability to control the pace of the game sets him apart. You can check out Sam's full breakdown on The Athletic. His draft guide is excellent. It has a lot of, it can give you comparables to the guys. It gives you backstory, bio, and things of that nature. We love the work that Sam does, and I wanted to make sure that we gave him credit here on Front Runner Podcast Collective. Another thing that I want to talk about with Harper is that his potential for creating offense advantages makes him one of the top prospects. Here's the thing. He's 6'5". He has point guard skills, but also he can shoot the rock. And he can shoot the rock at all three levels. He has different speeds in his gear case. Okay, so he can get there with the jets. He has a little power game. He knows how to dip the shoulder, get a little room, then fall away for a jump shot. His body control is excellent at this age. So there's a lot to like about Dylan Harper. There's a lot to like about his potential in the NBA. And the thing that I am looking for is that the lights will be bright in New Jersey with Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper there. And there are going to be a lot of teams gunning for them. So I want to see how they just handle the pressure with their year at Rutgers. Our producers, Soraya and Funch, been able to give us some great.
Absolutely, Vince, you're spot on with Harper's potential. And let's give the kid his flowers because his numbers are already backing up the hype. Dylan Harper's averaging 23.4 points per game, 7.6 rebounds, and 4.9 assists in his high school season. That's impressive versatility for a player his size. And like you said, he's doing it at all three levels. His ability to create advantages for his team is what sets him apart. With that 6'5 frame, and let's not forget his shooting efficiency, 40% from three, which is a huge asset in today's NBA where floor spacing is everything.
Now, the second person that I want to talk about, and this is a little bit further down the list, Donnie Freeman of the Syracuse Orange Men, he is a 6'8" forward. He is 19 years of age. Some of Freeman's strengths, his versatility and his explosiveness makes him one of the most exciting wings in the draft. Sam Vecenie said this, Freeman's potential as an upside wing, with his shooting improving as he adds weight and skill, his size and his bounce will put him in the NBA. Three things with Mr. Freeman. He is a throwback Orangeman. Now, for us olds, we remember like the Billy Owens. What was my guy's name? Was it Hakeem Christmas? There was that guy. There was another one that could jump out the gym too. Can't think of his name right now. Was it Warwick? I think it was Warwick as well. They've had some 6'8", 6'9" forwards in the past at the University of Syracuse, and this is another one of those. The thing that I want to see is that, well, I want to see his offensive rebounding. I want to see his efficiency there, and I also want to see him his block percentage at the University of Syracuse. Those are the two things that I want to see out of him. I think those are going to be two stats that are going to be telling for him as he moves along in this draft process. Keep in mind, like I said in the last episode, this is the last year for a lot of these guys potentially to put good tape together, right? Now, yeah, for the guys who are considered one and done, could they go back? Could they go into the draft process and see what they're supposed to work on and then go back for a sophomore year? 100%. But I'm telling you right now, the mindset of these guys right now, that is not it. Their mindset is, hey, man, I'm trying to get to the NBA after year one, and then let's start the clock 4 years later towards that max contract. You know what I'm saying? That's what they're thinking about. Now, Freeman could emerge as one of the top wings with the right development this season. It will be about his jump shot. It will be about his second side playmaking ability, if he's able to do it. These are things that are called into question. Now, the other thing that we have to worry with his athleticism is that sometimes he allows his athleticism to play more than his actual fundamentals. So I'm hoping that with a little more structure this year at Syracuse, we see a more refined Freeman, and it will catapult Donnie Freeman up the draft boards. Now, the next guy that I want to talk about is Cayman Malik. Now, this is the 7'1" kid who's going to Duke, who will be playing alongside just an embarrassment of riches, along with Cooper Flagg. And what's that, Knuckle, that kid Knuckle as well. They got a ton of them over there. They're loaded. But Malik will be manning the middle. He's a defensive anchor in the making. His offensive game needs a ton of refinement. He's very raw there. This is a old-fashioned, let's go ahead and pick and roll to death. Teach this dude how to just attack the rim with just complete viciousness. And let's ride. Duke's defensive rating will basically be on Malik. He is the anchor of the defense because he's the center. So he needs to be able to call out the switches, and he needs to call out some of the screen pick and rolls and things of that nature. Now, he's young. I'm not asking him to do all those things. But as the season continues to move on, and as he starts to continue to watch film, hopefully some of these things will just come naturally to him, and he'll be able to put people in the right position. Now, right now, he will lean on his athleticism. He does move his feet very well, but we'll see. Now, he's going to a new level. He's going to be playing at Duke. Now, Duke plays a marquee schedule. The chances for him to be getting embarrassed are high, just because the level of competition, but he's not going to shy away from that. That kid works hard. He puts a lot of effort into what he does. He is very coachable. He's very malleable when it comes to that situation. I think that he'll be a sponge, and I think that we will see a really good Cayman Malik this year. I don't know if it will get him into the lottery. I don't know if he'll have enough to do that, but I think that he definitely has enough to be in that late, right outside the lottery, maybe last till 20 at this time. Now, obviously, we have a whole year to go, so we'll see how it all goes. We talked about his mobility. We talked about him being a defensive asset, being able to protect the rim and things of that nature. The other thing is this. His hands are good. I would like to see more of it because a lot of people didn't utilize that part of his game. But his hand, he seems to be able to catch the ball in different radiuses. As far as certain, and his wingspan is somewhere in the 7'7 to 7'9 range. That's what I've been told. So he is incredibly long. He's incredibly agile. And I can't wait to see him at Duke. The next guy that I want to talk about is a guy that is a little bit older. And he'll be a little bit further down your draft boards. So if you're looking in your lottery picks or whatever, this next guy won't be there. But if you're looking towards the end of the first round or the top of the second round, this is exactly where he'll be. And what he does this year will decide where he goes. If he goes up towards like the low 20s, late teens, or kind of stays where he is. But Cam Jones of Marquette is a 6'4" wing. He's 23 years old, so he is on the older side. Jones is a versatile shooter. He shot 39% from three last year. He shot 67% at the rim last year. His ability to take on more of the lead guard role when needed, as evidence of his play late last season when Tyler Kolek was out with like injuries or whatever, it basically boded well for this year. So he's going to have the ball in his hands a lot more. He'll be able to go ahead and run a lot of pick and roll, which he's very good at. And we will see how that all goes. Now, he is also a very talented team defender. I would not call him like a primary on-ball type of guy. But he's able to guard in space. He has decent spatial awareness. He doesn't get beat backdoor a lot. Usually, you start to see it when he fatigues. You don't really see it just because of lackadaisical play. Let's go ahead and get on this offense where I'm more locked in. It's more of a, I'm tired, that dude got behind me, I need a blow, and then I can come back and guard up again. You got a lot of things to like. Now, this is going to be somebody who's going to be pro ready. This is somebody that you're taking. You're not thinking, okay, there's this crazy amount of upside, or this is a guy who is going to be in my starting rotation right away. But he's probably going to be a rotational player right off the bat. So if you're looking in the range of anywhere from 22 to 35, you know what I'm talking about. Those guys that are just, I'm coming in. I know I'm a spot up shooter. I know I'm supposed to defend this dude and this dude. I'm going to go ahead and do a little rebounding. I'm not a ball stopper. I'm not a black hole. And I just want to make the team, and I want to make sure I'm just an additive piece. This is Cam Jones in a nutshell. And Marquette seems to put out a lot of these guys, same as UCLA. UCLA and Marquette are like gold mines for these type of guys that are going to be in the league for 8 to 12 years, just simply because I know my role. I have self-awareness, and I'm going to be exemplary in the role that I get in the NBA. Look for Cam Jones' development throughout the season. He'll be playing a lot on Fox, a lot on ESPN, because it's Big East basketball, so you'll see him against Villanova, UConn, things of that nature. So keep a lookout for our guy, Cam Jones. And the last thing that I want to say on the NBA draft prospects is this, and then we'll move on to Paul George and how he's fitting in Philadelphia. When you look at the draft, for people who are really into it, now, a lot of you are looking at it because you're trying to create your own draft board. Some of you are just looking for information and trying to line it up with your team's needs and things of that nature. The other thing that I want you to think about when you look at some of these draft prospects is development is not linear. Some guys are going to get it right off the bat. We can look at like the top five right now and know that there's 2-3 dudes in there that, especially in this class, who are going to be able to get it in a sense right off the bat. They're going to understand what it is to be a pro and be able to go about and execute their situation and be malleable enough to whatever their team's desires are at this present time, but also they are impactful enough that they'll have a real big say in what their team does, because these are going to be teams that are looking for these young men to kind of elevate them to these next levels or whatever. But keep in mind, when you get a guy, especially when I was talking about the guys who were 6'3", I think I said this on the last podcast, guys that are 6'3", guys that are actual guards, might have trouble in the league. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because we're about to talk about a guy who has changed teams 3 or 4 times and is considered, other than maybe Kevin Durant, probably the most fittable superstar that you can have in the NBA. And this is Paul George. So Paul George obviously went to the Sixers in the offseason, much ballyhooed. What are the Sixers getting? In the first preseason game, my man put up 23 points in just 26 minutes. He included 4 three-pointers, showing his value to the Philadelphia offense as a floor spreader. Now, the other thing with his play, this is something that Tony Jones said in the article on The Athletic. He said, George's ability to make tough shots and handle the ball and find open shooters adds a dynamic to the Sixers they have missed. Yeah, because you think about it, if you have Embiid, who is I would say he is a good passer, but he's becoming a good passer. I think he took a leap last year. I think if he can tweak and he can diminish some of the turnovers, he would be even better personally. But I'm not going to hold him against him because he scores 35 points a game. I'm not going to do that. The other thing is that when you have Tyrese Maxey and now you have another guy like Paul George. Paul George is a spot-up shooter. He's a second-side initiator. Yeah, he could run your offense, but it's not like expert level. But on the second side, as somebody who's going to attack the paint and then draw the defense into him and then be able to find an open shooter, this is something that is right up his alley. And then you're talking about what that's going to look like with Joel Embiid. Keep in mind, Paul George is now asked to be the third option on this team. He's not asked to be the second option. Now, maybe in crunch time, he's asked to be the second option. But how the shots are going to line up here in Philadelphia is Ojo is going to get the ball, and he's going to get the majority of the shots. Second will be Tyrese Maxey, because he's earned that right. But what he did last year, and also what he did last year in the playoffs. And then you have Paul George. And why that dynamic is so important is that, one, you're taking some of the load off of Paul George and you're freeing him up to be able to be more of a facilitator and also somebody who can play on that defensive side of the ball. I'm not saying he's going to be a stopper. What I'm saying is that you're going to get maybe a more active person off ball, getting into the passing lanes and what have you, and starting fast breaks. Which, if you have Maxey and you have the other guys that you have on this team, a la Caleb Martin and what have you, Kelly Oubre Jr. and things of that nature. So you got to think about these type of things when you talk about adding a wing of the highest order, which is Paul George. Now, Philadelphia has a lot of competition in the East. New York, Boston, Cleveland, Indiana, Milwaukee, all these teams will be in the mix. But they have set themselves up to be like, hey, if we're healthy, we should be in this mix. And definitely Paul George's arrival to Philadelphia certifies that situation. The potential synergy between George and Maxey could be the Sixers, could make the Sixers one of the most dangerous teams in the East. I definitely understand that. Now, the thing that obviously you always have to worry about with Philadelphia is the durability concerns, not only with Joel Embiid, but with Paul George as well. And we talked about this in the offseason. Did Paul George understand where he was going? This is Philadelphia. This is not Los Angeles. And it definitely isn't the Clippers. A lot more scrutiny if you're a Laker. He would have understood the heat that he was about to walk into in Philadelphia if he would have played for the purple and gold. But because he did not and played for the Clippers, he's walking into a Hornets nest. Remember, Paul George has played for Indiana, he's played for OKC, and he's played for the Clippers. Ladies and gentlemen, those are not hotbeds of national media hitting you with question after question on a 6-for-19 shooting night. So, Paul George, I hope you are ready for the scrutiny and the fan heat that you're about to get in Philadelphia. They gonna love you, but you better put out effort. And again, the durability concerns. Now, you can say this for Paul George, not for Joel Embiid, but for Paul George. If he is ended up to be most of the year a third option, and he's there for most of the year, and also Embiid as well, you might be able to, in a sense, elongate Paul George's career because you're taking off some of the load, some of the offensive load that he'd have to carry. And the same thing goes for Embiid. If Embiid knows now, listen, I don't have to score 50 points in a game for us to win when I know that I got Maxey who can give me 25 and Paul George who can give me 22, 23. He now knows that the calculus is different because he's going to have to share the sugar with another guy. He's going to have another mouth to feed in this rotation. So there could be a situation where this durability thing is, in a sense, because you get another guy that you can really trust and you can really depend on, but maybe not necessarily at the low level that he was when he was with the Clippers or Indiana or OKC. Maybe it just benefits them all together. Health benefit for Maxey, Embiid, and George. We'll see. Here's the one thing I will say about that. And this is something I think Bill Simmons has said. I think this is something that Ryan Rosillo has said. I believe this is something Big Waz has said and Zach Lowe. As you get older and as your injury history continues to compile, that becomes the norm. So when we look at Joel Embiid and we look at the lower limb injuries that he has had and that he has sustained and that he has endured throughout his career, do we have a real indication that this is something that is in his past? I know there's a lot of Philadelphia fans out there who are sitting there going, man, this sounds really dour. It's not. I think you guys are having an incredible team. I do have one question. If he does somehow, let's say game 20, come up lame, and I'm talking about Joel Embiid, your 35-point-a-game center, your MVP candidate type of dude, and the one that was promised to you, right? If this guy comes up with some sort of meniscus bruise or whatever it is, are you guys ready, or is it that you guys are so all in with this team, would you not pivot off of Embiid? I know it's a question out there, and I know there are some Philly fans out there that have felt that maybe this is the highest value he'll ever have, and maybe we should trade him. And I just want to put that out there for the fans that really don't have a voice. So if you guys are out there, hit me up at FrontRunnerPC. Hit my producers up at Raya_Funch, FRPC, and let me know in your quiet time, maybe in the time that you don't talk about with your friends, do you wonder what the value is on Embiid at this point in time? And are you going like, that wouldn't be a bad little consolation prize if we ended up with that? Hit me up on X and let me know. I really do want to know. All right, let's move on. Now, Eric Pincus had like a breakout deal, and I want to hit on a couple guys because one of these guys, when they came out in the draft, I trashed this guy. So I'm going to say right now that obviously I need to do a mea culpa on that. And then the other guy is being one of our guys. So I want to go ahead and big up these two guys right now. But Eric Pincus wrote something, and I want to piggyback off of it. He was talking about, like, breakout candidates. And one of the breakout candidates that he had was Atlanta Hawks wing Jalen Johnson. Now, Jalen Johnson last year, he averaged 16 points a game. But he could have been even better last year. He had injuries that kind of held him back. Now, Hollinger of The Athletic, he's been high on Jalen Johnson's potential since the beginning. I've been more reserved when it came to Jalen Johnson. I've been more reserved when it came to him. But Hollinger predicted with an increased role, Johnson could make the leap to 20-plus points a game this season. And actually, I don't doubt that. I've done a 180 on Jalen Johnson. Now, remember his situation at Duke. He went to Duke. He was one of the five stars that went there. And this was in the last couple of years of Coach Krzyzewski being there. And for some reason, he got off to a good start, tailed off or whatever, had a knee injury, and then never returned to the team. And they tried to get him back, and there were things that were said and or whatever. And I don't know if it was Coach K as the game getting younger and younger. Was the game just passing him by at that time and he just couldn't connect with this star player? Or was it that Jalen Johnson had some maturing to do? I think there's a little bit of both on both sides. And I'm going to tell you, at the time of the draft, I remember him getting picked by Atlanta, and Nate McMillan was the coach at that time. And I said, this is good. This is good for Jalen Johnson because it won't be given to him. He'll have to earn it. And McMillan won't put him on the court unless he can play some defense and he won't turn over the ball. Now, he didn't get a lot of run, but he did get some, but as soon as Quinn Snyder came into the building, Quinn Snyder was enamored with this guy. Absolutely enamored. And this year, Johnson's increased role in the offense should lead to more scoring opportunities for him. I agree with that. And he's also shown the ability to be versatile on the defensive side of the ball. He finds a way. He's long. He's able to get in passing lanes. He's pretty intuitive when he's looking at things. And also, he point of attack defender, he's okay. He's not great, but he's okay. Stable, steady, love it. But he's able to defend multiple positions, 1 through 4 usually. And he's just a guy that I think as they move away from Trae Young, and I don't mean that disrespectfully. I'm just saying that they want to try to take some of the load off of Trae Young. For a lot of people believe that Atlanta's trying to tank this year. They're not, because their pick is owned by somebody else. So they have every incentive to try to be as good as they possibly can be. I know they're transitioning along this way. I know that DeJounte Murray is no longer there. But if you had a inclination last year that Jalen Johnson was going to have more ball handling responsibility, you were going to have to move DeJounte Murray anyway. And that backcourt was too small. Now you have Dyson Daniels next to Trae Young, which absolutely helps Trae Young. It can help Jalen Johnson because you have some more length. And now he doesn't have to recover to help out the itty-bitty guards that are in the backcourt. So this can definitely help out Jalen Johnson. Plus, you still have the monsters in the middle with Onyeka Kwangu and also Clint Capela until he gets traded. We will see. But I do believe that Jalen Johnson has a chance to be a absolutely most improved player of the year this year. Personally, I think he'll have all the opportunities to do, and I do believe that he is going to make the most of those opportunities as well. Now, let's get to my guy, Cam Whitmore. If you continue to follow this pod, I am a huge Cam Whitmore supporter. I do not waver in my support of Cam Whitmore. Despite all of the roster obstacles and lack of minutes in the rotation, I still believe that my boy Cam Whitmore is going to ascend and become victorious of this battle royale that is the Wings of Houston. They got a ton of them. All right, let's get into it. Okay, he had a crazy summer league. I don't know if you saw it. Now, obviously, it is summer league. We not trying to trip. But he showed that he literally shouldn't even be playing. He looked completely just underwhelmed by what was going on at summer league altogether. He averaged almost 20 points a game at 19.3, 5.2 rebounds, and 2.5 steals. He's poised for a significant role with Houston this season. I hope so. I really hope so. Here's a quote from the NBA GM survey. Whitmore is a name to watch as a breakout star in 2024-2025 with expectations for his production off the bench to continue to grow. So that's anonymous GM out there just seeing what I see, which is a reincarnation of Latrell Sprewell. So with a jump shot. So I'm looking forward to it. His rookie season gave us an indication of why we should be excited. Okay. He was at 12.3 points a game. He was at 3.8 rebounds. He shot 45.4% from the field. He did his thing. Now, here's the thing. Now, I don't know if he will be able to start. Jalen Green is still there. I don't know what's going to go on. I think there is a roster reconstruction going to happen in Houston. I don't know if Cam will survive it or Cam will end up not surviving it. But what I will say is that this is an Ime Udoka type of player. So I'm going to go ahead and say personally, without real reporting, that I think that Cam Whitmore will survive this situation. I also think that Cam Whitmore at some point this year will be in the starting lineup. And if I am in love with Reed Sheppard the way I am, and I think that both of them will be in the starting lineup, what does that mean for Fred VanVleet or Jalen Green? Inquiring minds would like to know. On my take on Cam Whitmore, I think that Cam Whitmore, it's not the way he scores, okay? Because, listen, they can all do that. I love the way he prepares. I love the way he defends early on because he really gives a shit. I think he studies a lot. I think he's cut out of that mold of the Villanova people that we used to. It's like the Mikal Bridges, the Jalen Brunsons. Who's my guy? He's three names. Earl Johnson. Love that kid. Dante DiVincenzo, obviously. They've had a lot of these kids that came out, and they're just hard-nosed basketball players. And Cam Whitmore, to me, has great defensive instincts. He can shoot the ball, and he also can get to the rim. And then I think that means that he will get fouled a lot. So then he's going to be an efficient player at the NBA level. And I just think it's just opportunity at this point. And what ends up being the core of this team, I think that's the biggest question in Houston right now. What will be the core? Will it be Alperen Sengun, Jabari Smith, Jalen Green? Will it be Cam Whitmore, Reed Sheppard, Tari Eason? Will it be a mixture of those of the younger entity and the slightly older entity? There's so much to get figured out in Houston. But to me, they're the team to watch that if a superstar becomes available because of the just treasure trove of actual NBA players that they physically have, and also the draft picks, that's the team to watch. That's the team to watch if somebody shakes loose. Crank up the disgruntled NBA superstar merry-go-round. I bet you Houston, their name will be all over that. All right, so what did we learn today? We learned that Paul George is fitting in well in Philadelphia. He went out there and did some light work, 26 minutes, 23 points, hit a couple threes, just doing PG things, you know what I'm saying? He's just doing PG things. The other thing that we talked about is we talked about the NBA draft. Remember, if this is the first time you're hearing Dylan Harper on our podcast, that means that you are new, and that's great. We're happy to have you. Go back to the archive pods and check out more on the NBA prospects because we've been doing it all summer long, at least the top 30. The other thing is this. We talked about Cam Whitmore. We talked about also, and I'll say it like this. Couple breadcrumbs for you. That rotation needs figured out in Houston. And I believe that Cam Whitmore is like the fork in the road piece. I believe he'll be one of the men standing as a Houston Rockets when the roster reconstruction happens. But we will see. So with that being said, you guys have a good rest of your Friday or a good rest of your Saturday. Also, keep in mind, we are going back to regular schedule, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday next week. And also, next week is prediction time. What we're going to do, so you'll know, Monday is going to be We're going to talk about the teams that are towards the bottom, and we're going to talk about their developmental pathways. We're going to talk about some of their young players, what we would like to see out of them this year, who's in their way as far as their development, or is there obstacles that are unforeseen for them this upcoming 24-25 NBA season. Then what we're going to do Wednesday is we're going to move on to the Eastern Conference and then talk to you about who we consider the top 8 to 10 seeds and then who we think are going to make the playoffs and what have you the case may be, right? And then on Friday, we're going to do the same thing with the West. So that is what your schedule is going to look like. If you are looking for predictions, you want to see where your team is going to rank in our imaginary poll or whatever you want to call it, or basically our analysis throughout the summer. Because we've been watching this thing. We've been talking to people. We've been taking notes. We've been watching some of these preseason games. And then the culmination is this week, you're going to know where we believe your team is going to end up this year. Now, obviously, trades happen, so things change. But this is what we look your roster right now, front office, coach. This is what we think, and what have you. Now, there could be a cause for alarm, could be cause for just celebration, like you're moving up the ranks or whatever the case may be. But we will give solid information on those type of items, and we will have a legitimate reason for where you are, right? Let's see, is there anything else that we need to talk about with that? No, I think that's it. Monday, young teams, tanking teams, teams that need roster overhauls. Who are the young players? Who are the people that we need to look out for? And what is their developmental pathway? That'll be on Monday. Eastern Conference, Wednesday. Western Conference, Friday. And then Monday. We will have individual awards. Not this Monday, but the Monday after next. Or Monday, the next Monday, whatever I'm talking about. How it works, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then the next Monday, you will have MVP predictions, Rookie of the Year predictions, Coach of the Year, Sixth Man, Most Improved. We don't do clutch because we hate that stupid thing. I cannot stand that. Defensive Player of the Year, all NBA teams, all of that. We will have all of that for you. Next, not this Monday, the following Monday. So your week is stacked. Where you know exactly where you need to be. It's at Front Runner Podcast Collective, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Why? Young teams, teams that have roster reconstructions, or they're on their way to roster reconstructions, and they're young talent and what they're trying to do to rebuild. Wednesday, Eastern Conference. What's the bloodbath going to turn out to be? Is New York up there? Is Boston still king of the hill? Did Philadelphia slide in? Where's Milwaukee, right? And then Friday. We save it for last because I live on the West Coast and I think it's the best coast. So we're going to do the West. And I'm going not home for the Lakers. Now, this is not a homer type of podcast. This is realistic evaluations of teams. And I'm going to tell you my honest to God truth on what I think of the teams. And then on Monday, we will go ahead and reveal who we think will be MVP, who we think will be all NBA, who we think will be Rookie of the Year. So keep it locked here at Front Runner Podcast Collective for that. With that being said, enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll see you on Monday, and we leave you with this. The best part of you is you. Make sure that the people that surround you are doing everything to make your light bright. go out and do some good in the world, and we'll see you back on this podcast on Monday. Peace.